Your Honors, my intention is to reserve approximately 5 minutes of my time.
Sir.
So we'll head down that path. Your Honors, may it please the court, my name is Andy Iverson with the law firm of Hamilton Fotts, and my registration number is 30908. Your Honor, we're here today on a case that's rather unique in some ways because Colorado law, and for that matter, law that I could not find in any other jurisdiction, doesn't really answer what's going on before us, except that Colorado law does guide us. And the guidance goes down the path of the Grahams, the landowners, are the only innocent, truly innocent party in this matter. What's happening here is that the sale of land ordered by Judge Miller is basically giving land to the trespassers in this case, who really have no rights in the land at all. In fact, they've sold it years ago, the Grahams being down the chain of that deed of title with bona fide purchaser in between. So ultimately what happens here is the trespassers are not the innocent parties. The Grahams really are. The
trespassers... Mr. Iverson,
yes.
Pardon me for interrupting
no
you,
problem.
But I'd like to test that for a minute if I may, please.
Absolutely.
I hope I am pronouncing their name correctly, but Skulak, is that the appropriate way to pronounce the name?
Skulak.
Skulak, all right, thank you very much. The Skulaks owned all this property at one point, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And they were the ones that subdivided it?
Correct.
So this is not a situation where we had someone who built something onto someone else's property. They built this on their own property, right?
They did at the time that it was built. Mr. Skulak has been involved with the Tiger Sanctuary since approximately 1993. The land was subdivided in 1997. They could sell it and make money. During that process, Mr. Skulak took title to the sanctuary, and then also they hired a surveyor to come in and, of course, subdivide and, you know, divvy up the properties. Pursuant to that, in 1998, Mr. Skulak decided to build his house. Now, where the house is the house that the Grahams own today. That sits on approximately a 36-acre parcel, and that has to comply with Senate Bill 35 as part of the subdivisions. Basically, Your Honor, what has happened is the Skulaks, through this process, have had various entities involved, and you're going to hear them today try to claim that they're innocent, but they're not, because they were involved. It was them and or their entities. They knew at all times what was going on with this property. They owned both the sanctuary and the land now that the Grahams own. So what has happened is they subdivided, and they're the ones that hired the surveyor. Through their deed transactions to transfer the property, they did not bother to resurvey or check the survey to make sure that when title changed on the sanctuary and on the Graham parcel, to make sure they actually had what they had thought they had.
Counsel, by the same token, was there anything that prevented the current landowners from having the opportunity to conduct their own survey to make sure that they were purchasing what was represented to them?
Well, everybody has an opportunity to do a survey upon purchase. When the Grahams bought the land, they were not informed of any issues through, like, the property disclosures and from their predecessors who purchased the land from the Skulaks, the trespassers, as we call them. What happened is Mr. Graham was on his property one day, and the volunteer or somebody, I believe, from the sanctuary, I'm not sure who exactly it was, but somebody from the sanctuary came over and basically accused Mr. Graham of being on their property and that he was trespassing and that he needed to stop. That's what triggered Mr. Graham to go, wait a second, I thought this was my property. So he had a survey conducted. And at that point, that's when he learned the severity of what was going on. And also that not only was it a bigger problem than he even imagined, but that the trespassers were in fact the wrongdoers here, not him. He was on his property.
Understanding that we didn't have a survey at the time of the sale that exposed this situation, it's not like the sanctuary was a hidden thing, right? It's out there for everyone to see. And when the Grahams bought the property, I assume that they understood that the sanctuary was there. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. It was there. It's been there from approximately 1993. And it's out in the open.
But when they purchased it, they didn't think they owned the sanctuary. Is that correct?
No, they knew they weren't purchasing the sanctuary because that was reserved in roughly a 10-acre parcel through the subdivision. So no, they weren't purchasing the sanctuary at all.
So it probably came into a surprise, as a surprise to them, that they in fact did own the land which encompassed the disputed area.
I suspect, I don't know the direct answer to that. I guess it would be somewhat of a surprise because, of course, they didn't expect to own the sanctuary. They bought their roughly 36-acre parcel and didn't realize that 2.7 acres of it, which puts them below Senate Bill 35, was being used by somebody else. Your Honors, but through the transaction with the Skulaks and subdividing and transferring this property, you know, they transferred title to themselves back and forth to their entities and whatnot over this period of time. In fact, in 2000,
well, they also, there was also a series of foreclosures, right?
There were, yeah. There's intervening foreclosures, yes.
And not just one. I mean,
no, there was,
the property's been back and forth several times, right?
Yes, yes. But through none of that did the Skulaks entertain the idea of getting a survey to try and understand when they broke off the Graham parcel from the sanctuary to understand or make sure that they actually had what they thought they had either. In 2009, Julie Walker, that's Mr. Skulak's second wife, she took title to the sanctuary. At that point in time, the Graham parcel had already been sold to the Graham's predecessors. So even at that time, they did not take the measure to also have a survey to make sure that they were actually getting what they expected to get. Through this, Your Honor, at the trial level, the Skulaks, the trespassers, have never disputed that the Grahams own the land in fee simple title. In fact, the survey that the Grahams had done is the only survey that was ever done in this case presented to the trial court. It's never been disputed. Judge Miller never raises a question to that. He clearly indicates that the Grahams are the fee title owners to this land. Through this, Your Honors, clearly the trespassers had control over what was going on. They were the ones subdividing it. They were the ones hiring the surveyors.
The real issue here is the remedy, is it not? Could you address that? I assume you're going to at some point, but mm-hmm. I think that's what we're most interested in, and what authorities you think back your position.
Well, Your Honors, what I found is rather interesting. One, I think the remedy that Judge Miller imposed under Golden Press doesn't work. I think it's an arbitrary application of the law in this situation. One, I've looked at Colorado law, clearly Golden Press, of course, in the Hunter Manziel case, which Judge Miller also referenced. But I've also looked for other law. I can't find any case in Colorado or any other jurisdiction that warrants the sale of land to a trespasser, that forces that sale. But what I found was interesting. Through some of the case law, I found some comments, one by Federal Deposit Insurance versus Mars, from this Court of Appeals in 1991, saying even in 1991, there's no authority from any jurisdiction to order the sale of land to depossess a landowner with undisputed fee title to the benefit of one who holds absolutely no interest, present or prospective. Similarly, in Hunter v. Manziel, that same concept is reiterated. It says that doing a balancing of hardships for the convenience of the trespasser is not proper. And when we look at the situation, Judge Miller even acknowledged that. He said that he was going against the flow of the law. He wanted this case to be heard by Your Honors. In Golden Press, it doesn't warrant this novel remedy. In Golden Press, in order to get to this balancing of hardships, you have to have a slight trespass. You have to have a trespass that does not affect the landowner's use of the property. That trespass has to be unintentional, and there has to be small damages. Judge Miller expressly found that this trespass was not slight. It was 2.7 acres.
Well, part of that was the dump, right?
Yeah, one acre of the 2.7 yeah, was the dump site.
And I'm under, if I understand correctly, the dump, the court ordered that the dump be remediated and that that be returned to the Grahams. That's not the issue here, right?
No, no, no. The issue is the remaining 1.7 acres, but, right, the, but okay, the entire trespass began as 2.7. Not to trivialize it, but I think that's what you're going to hear from the appellees, is they're going to have to trivialize the trespass itself to try and get it to a position of being slight. However, Judge Miller didn't find that it was slight. Your Honor's on the 5 minutes. I'll take another minute or so and work through this. Here, Your Honors, we also have a problem where when the trespassers were informed of the trespass, they refused to do anything. But in Golden Press, the landowner in Golden Press, we're talking about mere inches of trespass in Golden Press, which sits 7 to 9 feet below the surface. There is no surface trespass in Golden Press. But the landowner in Golden Press refused to allow the trespassing party to come in and remove the literally 2.5-inch strip of the foundation footer 7 to 9 feet below the surface. And Golden Press in that case said that that was unconscionable for that landowner to do it. Therefore, they allowed the trespass. Even in Golden Press, they did not force a sale of the property. In fact, they said, the court said in that case, that the landowner could pursue damages, but it was unconscionable for them not to allow the removal of the trespass. Your Honors, the other problem we have in this case is that the trespassers are trying to inject issues of their own findings, which, one, they've never filed an appeal in this case. Not directly, or not even a cross appeal. They're trying now to argue in their answer brief that the trespass was slight. That's not what Judge Miller found. They're also trying to argue that because of their unwitting use of the fences, that there could not be a trespass. Again, Judge Miller declined to find that they had not done wrongdoing. Also, Your Honors, they bring up the issue of adverse possession again. They withdrew their adverse possession claim at the trial level. So that the statute 3841.101 doesn't even apply in this case. And finally, Your Honor, you know, the only argument that the trespassers have is to really hit the emotional argument of the Endangered Species Act. However, Judge Miller expressly found that the societal benefit of tigers does not outweigh the Grahams' property rights. And he did not, and Judge Miller also found that the Endangered Species Act does not preempt the Grahams' rights. But more importantly, there's been no appeal from the appellees to try and reverse those decisions and findings by Judge Miller. Your Honors, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Certainly, Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Gregory John Hawk of Gregory John Hawk, PC. My attorney number is 4724. In the daily grind of the practice of law, one can come across cases that one is just privileged to be part of, and one hopes you're up to it. And to the extent I am not up to it, I hope your scholarship is. But this is a privileged case for me to be here before you, and I think for this panel to do something excellent at law. This is not a trivial case. Nor is it a mere dispute between landowners. What we have is a 3-month journey of the trial court in search of wrongdoing. It began by a summary judgment, casually finding wrongful entry. And in the course of considering the legal arguments and the evidence of the remedy and damages, the court then found that wrongdoing took upon the face of good faith and prescient public policy. And so I tried in my answer brief to explain why the trial court did what it did in this very unusual case. I looked for the word wrongdoing in all the court orders, the three that are before you today. The summary judgment order of March 4th, the rather soon reconsideration of March 22nd, and the ultimate epiphany decision, that final address of remedies by the June 6th order. And I have only found two references to wrongdoing. The first, of course, was in the summary judgment with respect to wrongful entry, which was quickly reconsidered when the court realized that these defendants had nothing to do with any illegal entry of constructing improvements. They were legal when built, and they did not later become illegal. They did become encroachments. There's a difference. Encroachments, by the way, of course, the plaintiff bought. It's a, I feel for the Grahams that they build a $600,000 luxury home, and in that purchase bought part dump, part wildlife park. Now, I know there was some concern on behalf of distinguished counsel that my clients didn't do a survey. Let's not parse words. They hired a surveyor, and the subdivision description was wrong. So the first finding of the court of wrongdoing was quickly modified in the March 22nd order, and the court said, wait a minute. There is a wrongdoing when these people from the wildlife park and through the agents care for the cats. But we really don't know their use adverse to the plaintiff. I don't know very much. I need a hearing on that to examine it. So in the order of March 22nd, was the last time I remember, in search of the pleadings, that the court spoke of wrongdoing. Because by June 6th, when the court had the epiphany, and ironically, some of the anchoring of decisions are found in the footnotes of the March 22nd and in the June 6th. In the March 22nd, the court realized quickly within 18 days that it was thinking of using injunction to advance public policy, that this is Colorado law. He did not express that, but the footnote says, you know what, I'm thinking of a judicial sale. Now, on June 6th, the court shared why it was thinking in that fashion.
Counsel, what authority supports the trial court's imposition of a forced sale?
Well, this is new and an excellent question. And this is a unique matter, Your Honor, of using an injunction to advance prescient public policy. And I looked at Colorado law, and I did not find a forced judicial sale. But injunction can be used for good, not just to punish bad, which in this case was not present. So this is why the court's privileged. I mentioned in terms of scholarship in my remarks on privilege that there's a footnote. Did you read the University of Colorado, the University of Chicago Law Review? I have to confess the court found that on its own. So moved was his trial court. That's the snail darter case that the law review discusses. And that the federal government, as a matter of national public policy, including Colorado then, would not count the cost to protect endangered species, even if it's $100 million to stop a dam 80% completed. And then in that article, there is the public policy that the law, federal law, will stop the predation of endangered species by either government or individual people. Yes, Judge?
Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Hawk. I'm sorry. But do we really have to get involved in the Endangered Species Act to affirm the trial court's order? Is that a necessary part of our analysis?
I think it is critical that it be addressed. That act does, it preempts the injunction that is oppressive that would allow a private party to cause my client to conduct criminal acts under the federal law, or at least be exposed to prosecution, because they want the animals taken off. That's understandable. And maybe when they filed the lawsuit, they didn't realize the real party who damaged them, the sellers. Perhaps they didn't realize when they filed the lawsuit they were dealing with endangered species. We're sorry about that. But when if there is that injunction that they have requested be issued, what it means is my clients have to take and euthanize endangered species, period, because they cannot otherwise be relocated, as in the findings of the court. That forces my client to face criminal prosecution. Nor would the trial court allow the plaintiffs to use it to accomplish the criminalization that the act was against. And of course, those statutes, as you know, are in the record. What I think is critical to the understanding of this case is that law review article and the federal policy. And I think this court ought to hit it straight on. Handle it as you will, but don't dismiss it. Now, there are other aspects, of course, that are unique and incredible. But if you want to get my judgment at the core of why you use an injunction for good, normally we use it as a shield against bad. But I think this is a superior opportunity, and I think it can be done by a very carefully drafted opinion. This is not going to happen again. And you can serve the public well by addressing in an honest way the tensions, the resolution of those tensions, so that people who will read this decision will be more aware. I would address it.
In answer to Judge Fox's question then as to what authority you have, the only thing you have then is the University of Chicago Law Review article and the Endangered Species Act. Is that correct?
Well, no, I have briefed the New Jersey case, and in Manziel, you know, there was a reference to the New Jersey case of a judicial sale. Now, I realize in that New Jersey safe case, there was an adverse possession found in that case. So you should be careful on that. But nonetheless, Manziel goes ahead, and in that case, there was an option. There was an alternative remedy citing the New Jersey case, and I think it can be done here. If we look at Horry is an exciting case. Horry takes you through about 100 years of Colorado trespass law. And what Horry says is, when there's prescient public policy, in Colorado, it was looking at the formation of the state in its early years, the critical necessity of railroads and irrigation in the trespassing of what sparks from old trains can do and what flooding can irrigation can harm. And so, wait a minute, we're going to treat, this state needs railroads to grow and irrigation to prosper. And so we're going to treat those kinds of trespasses not as just two landowners. There's something bigger going on here, the state of Colorado. So we're going to make room in this old English common law for growth. The endangered species makes room not only for growth, but puts upon my client a requirement to enter onto the encroaching pens, 19 of them, where the tigers and other cats are, to care for them. My client can't sit back and say, we have an ongoing trespass, I'm not going to cross the line over there, I'm going to let the cats starve. No, the act won't allow it. Or I will take the cats, and if I can't find a place, as the court was so worried and found unlikely by the technical arguments and the size of the park and how wildlife parks are struggling, you know, you no doubt know my clients are bereft of funds, then kill them.
One of the court's considerations apparently was that the Grahams really didn't have a defined use for this property.
That's right. The court puts, again, its focus at the right place, because a distinguished colleague indicate that contrary to Ryland's, this was not a slight encroachment. Let's talk about slight. Because I suppose technically that's true. In Lylands, it just happened to be a geographical inches under the ground kind of deal. Well, the 1.7 acres was prescribed by someone and was legal. So that 1.7, my clients did not go out and build 1.7 acres of encroachments. Don't lay that on my clients.
My question is, why does that make any difference?
Well,
if there's an encroachment, and Colorado law generally supports taking the encroachment off.
Well, the trial court, of course, addressed that and said, listen, we're looking at the plaintiff's use and its impact on the plaintiff, its value, and the bottom line is this land is marginal, very close to the word slight. So we don't look in a one-dimensional, what's the acreage? That's a kind of one-dimensional approach that this court said no. As a matter of fact, the court helped the Grahams. Who would buy this house with a dump and a encroaching wildlife? Nobody. Who will mortgage it? Nobody. They need to get rid of it. But they can't force my clients to tear down the encroachments which were legal and we did not build. We, in that regard, are as innocent as the Grahams. The court then said, what can I do? The Grahams elected to proceed with an injunction against endangered species. I don't think that was a very good choice. They also failed to hold the party accountable for their damages, the seller, as selling them the encroachments. So what now is the court to do?
Pardon me for interrupting, counsel, but your time is up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Iverson, you've got a little over 2.5 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, it's interesting. The only support that the trespassers can argue in this case is like Judge Martis pointed out, it's a Law Review article. But they also try to then bootstrap in this New Jersey case, the Menil versus Gorski case. Well, in Hunter v. Manziel, this court refused and declined to initiate a line of authority requiring the forced sale of property because the New Jersey case didn't involve a trespass. It was clearly adverse possession, but even more so, and perhaps more differently than this case. We're talking about a subdivision that had lots that measured, if I remember right, approximately 100 feet by maybe 100 feet. Very, very small parcels of property. And in the New Jersey case, we're also talking about a mere 15 inches as part of a sidewalk that was involved. But even in the New Jersey case, there was no forced sale. The issue there was adverse possession. And the court remanded the case in New Jersey, the Court of Appeals in New Jersey remanded that case for a determination as to the open and notorious nature of that particular adverse possession. So it didn't even involve trespass.
Judge Bernard asked the question whether we even have to consider the Endangered Species Act.
I don't believe we do, Your Honor. One, Judge Miller found that it doesn't preempt. Two, what's interesting is it's clearly an emotional argument. But the danger to that emotional argument is a piece of the Endangered Species Act that is admitted in the answer brief that's not disclosed here. And in the answer brief, it's located on page 24. What you're not being told is the trespassers cannot euthanize the tigers. They can't make that decision. That is not for them to decide. They must seek prior approval from the federal government to do so. So the issue of not being able to walk into these pens and care for the tigers, that's misleading. Judge Miller found that the animals and the people are a continuing trespass, very clear in his decisions. But for the trespassers to say that they have to trespass to care for the animals makes no sense, because you have to remove the trespass. Remove the tigers. Care for them elsewhere. Build other pens. There are other options here, but those other options are overlooked because it's easy to go to this emotional argument. Really an argument that they can't do without any prior federal approval. That means that the tigers could have new pens. We've even, at the point, Your Honors, we've said if you want to take the fencing materials down, even though, as Mr. Hawk indicated, arguably the Grahams purchased it through the chains of title, we'll give them the materials. They can build these cages on elsewhere on their 10 acres of land that they have. I don't understand why that's being refused.
Pardon me for interrupting, counsel, but your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank
you. Counsel, thank you very much for your arguments. We appreciate them. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Please drive safely home.